A podcast of the cinema.
Today with extra ambient noises.
Yes, because it is a warm day and it is Pride Sunday here in Los Angeles. So,
Well, you know, if we lived over in Sherman Oaks,
it would not be. It is Pride in West Hollywood, noisy. Which is down the street from us.
It is literally one block from our apartment, which is where the parade goes by. And all the people go woo-woo, and the house music goes thump-thump.
I mean, it's mid-afternoon,
or rather, so it goes oops, 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 oops.
Yeah. It's mid-afternoon, so the worst of it is over, I think. But you may hear some...
Don't you mean the best?
Either way. You may hear some rowdy revelers coming back to their cars.
You're going to hear... Yeah, you're going to hear that. happy Pride Day to you, Alonzo Duralde, host of... What the co-host of What the Flick on the Young Turks Network, and also the co-host of Who Shot Ya on the Maximum Fun Network, and also the film editor of The Rap. You're my favorite G in LGBT.
Thank you, film reviews editor. Thank you.
What did I say? What did I say?
You said film editor, which is probably someone else.
Different.
Yes. Yes. And you are my favorite some letter in that configuration.
I'm a Q. I'm a Q.
Fine.
I'm straight up queers.
You're the plus.
I'm one of the queers.
Dave White.
I mean, I'm primarily gay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In all the ways that it matters. Film critic for The Rap, co-host of this program, film critic.
And the dude who laid two new untried recipes on Pride Morning Eaters.
It's true.
This morning, and both of them were successful.
Yeah.
And our guinea pig friends ate them up yum.
They did.
It was something that I will talk about in detail on Linoleum Knife and Fork, which is a food podcast that is hosted by two film critics that you can listen to if you subscribe to us at patreon.com/linoleumknife. That's
correct.
The only ad you're going to hear about that all day.
You will also circle back to it at the end.
And we'll just get it all out of the way right now. You'll also get LKTV, which is the TV podcast. You also get Linoleum Nights, which is the podcast that we do with Swears.
Mm-hmm.
And
prizes and hangouts and
prizes
things.
And hangouts and things.
Enjoy us.
So that's all you need to know about that. I don't like to take... This is a beautiful holiday where marketing should not come into play.
Too late.
This is LGBT day, and
look,
we're two LGBTs.
It's the Wells Fargo floats.
Listen, I already talked about that this morning on Linoleum Nights. I don't want anybody yelling at me about that either. All I said, innocently... was that I wanted to throw a bottle of my own urine at the Wells Fargo float at the Gay Pride Parade. I don't see what's wrong with that idea.
I am not contradicting you in any way.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Pride apparently got nutty last night. It was overbooked
and overwild.
Yeah, overwhelmed. They had to, like, send people home with helicopters.
And the riot police were there. Cause
something.
You know what? The Queens are going to get real rowdy and cause a riot.
Well... then maybe they shouldn't sell too many tickets for a function that can only fit so many.
Oh, no, I'm totally on the side of the riot queens.
Yes.
I don't get me wrong about that either.
We have them to thank.
Where's
for all
that
of
Wells Fargo
us?
Float parked?
Anyway, it's a big week for movies.
It is. We begin it by watching the Australian film from 1971 or two?
71.
Wake in Fright.
Yeah, which we go very deep
on
Who Shot Ya this week. It was an April Wolf pick.
Now, you guys have already done that episode.
Yes, it's up now.
And it's up now.
Yes, with special guest Benjamin Partridge of the Beef and Dairy Network podcast.
Yes.
Who was lovely. He was very funny.
I gotta say,
that movie's a freak out.
Two of these things in 1 week is really spinning my head around. I had never seen Wake and Fright.
Me neither. I'd never heard of it.
Classic of Ozploitation.
Well, April says it gets lumped into Ozploitation, but it's really a forebearer of the Australian New Wave.
It's part of the Australian New Wave?
Yeah, I think so. Well, even though Ted Kotcheff is Canadian, but it was...
It's... Okay, sure it is.
Well, think about it.
But it's no Picnic at Hanging Rock.
No, but the
it's just upsetting.
Yeah. I mean, the Australian New Wave, like, you know, The Shout and Walkabout and The Last Wave. There was, like, a lot of those movies were, you know, they weren't all my brilliant career.
I understand. I know. We could call it the New Wave. We can call it Ozploitation. Let's
it nestles into both.
Say it's both, okay? Yeah. It is not a horror film, although that is what I was always led to believe.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like Deliverance or something.
But it functions... Well, no. It is like Deliverance, because Deliverance is also not a horror film. It, however, very much like Deliverance, functions the way a horror movie should, and at the end of it, you feel kind of horrible.
True, yes. So I guess I thought it was going to be exactly like Deliverance in terms of how the city guys encounter with the, you know...
The Yebba
folks and the Yebba.
The Yebba.
What do you mean you don't like the Yebba?
You guys, if you ain't seen Wake and Fright, you should. It's gnarly.
Mm-hmm. Psychologically gnarly. And it's streaming, and there is a really, trigger warning, there is a lengthy, horrifying kangaroo hunt. That was done by actual kangaroo hunters.
And
kangaroos did die in the making of this film.
They're killing kangaroos.
But apparently, it was the environmentalist protection people who were trying to save the kangaroo who insisted that they use like this really horrifying footage,
right,
as a way to, you know, there's nothing. They're not glorifying the act of kangaroo hunting. Let's be clear.
No. This is not a fun sequence at all.
No, quite
this
the is, opposite.
Why don't we jump right into this film's spiritual cousin,
Hereditary?
Talk about Hereditary. I would like to talk about Hereditary in a way
that doesn't spoil
anything.
Sure.
Would you like to explain the plot?
I will give it my best shot. I think I gave a fairly spoiler-free roundup in my review at The Wrap.
It's the debut feature from
Ari Aster.
Yes.
This is one of the critical response and audience response have been two very different things.
Yes.
Making me wonder if people...
Critics are digging it.
People were led to expect something else.
And audiences have given it a D+ cinema score.
Yes.
Which, in the words of Christy Lemire...
Is a badge of honor.
Is a badge of honor. And I agree with her.
Well, and I think this specifically falls into that category of, if this is being sold to you as a straight up horror movie,
and it is being sold as a straight up horror movie, just like last year that They Come at Night or It Comes at Night.
Yes,
definitely sold as a horror movie, not a horror movie.
Yeah, I mean Mother, I think certainly was.
Mother was kind of sold as a horror movie.
Yeah,
it wasn't one. Hereditary has elements of horror,
mm-hmm.
very traditional elements of horror. There's a supernatural component,
and there are some explicit violence.
And there's some pretty horrific violence. Talk about what it's about.
Okay. Toni Collette plays an artist who makes these sort of like dollhouse diorama things, as near as you can tell, of traumatic moments of her own life.
Domestic trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like little dollhouse scenes.
Yeah.
Of things that aren't good.
Unpleasant.
That would happen to a family or
right.
just in your life.
Her mother dies, and she's always had a somewhat fraught relationship with her, and I think has clearly been attempting to be a different kind of mother to her own children, but, you know, sometimes these cycles just catch you whether you expect them or not. She has a teenage son, played by Alex Wolff, and a young daughter, played by Millie... Millie Shapiro. It's her first film, but she won a special Tony for playing Matilda on Broadway.
Which I didn't know until after the fact.
Yeah.
She is...
There are some very subtle prosthetics going on here that make her look not like the kind of girl that gets cast in a Broadway musical.
Yes. And also, because of those prosthetics, and because she's a newcomer and you don't really know what is prosthetic and what is not, and her performance is so rivetingly strange and unsettling, that it made me think throughout the entire film, like, who is that? Did they hire, like, a girl who was that person?
Yeah.
And I get out of the movie and I go look her up at home and I'm like, oh, no, she has a Tony. She's been a professional child actor since three. Like, I read a little bit of an interview with her. She's like, I read the script and I really felt blah, 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 blah. I'm like, you're 13. Don't talk like a grown person, like little Dakota Fanning. But no, she can go. Listen, go ahead and talk like a grown person. Yeah. You're 13.
You're talented.
You're a pro. Yeah.
You know what you're doing. One day you'll be governor of New York, just like Cynthia Nixon.
Mm-hmm. She's not governor of New York just yet.
Yeah, she will be.
You think so?
I don't know. I have no idea. I haven't really been following it. I don't know how that's going.
Do you want her to be? We don't know if we even want her to be.
I don't live in New York, but I mean, she talks a good game. She says the right things. She's for the right things, I think.
Okay.
So, anyway, a familial tragedy occurs, which makes a tense relationship between Toni Collette's character and the other members of her family all the more difficult. She has been sneaking out to a grief group where she encounters a woman played by Ann Dowd. And that's when you know...
When Aunt Lydia shows up.
Yeah. It's things, trouble is afoot.
You think something's going to happen.
I'll leave it at that. I think that's enough plot.
There is a
supernatural element.
There's a supernatural element. There is a family tragedy. And there is...
an ending that is open to interpretation.
There is ambiguity.
Yeah.
And there is serious freak out.
Yes.
What else would you like to say?
Well, I am ambivalent about that ending, and I understand that there are multiple interpretations of it, but I'm not crazy about any of them. But I think that up until that point, this is a masterfully made film of mood and dread and subtle discomfort.
Subtle?
Well, okay, and not so subtle.
Not subtle. Extreme discomfort.
But it runs the gamut. So I think this is a director to watch. I think this is a really impressive first film. I do think that it is perhaps in the tradition of movies that premiered at Sundance and everybody went bananas over. It's been a tad oversold by the original audiences, but I think there's a lot to like here. I think the sound design is exquisite. The cinematography is fascinating. The performances are really good. I think Toni Collette's never been better. I think Alex Wolff is extraordinary in this, and I've liked him a lot in a lot of different films. The ending I still have issues with, and I'm discovering on Twitter now there are other people who like love the movie, but that ending really. It sticks in their craw, and I'm kind of in that camp, I think. But there are some visual choices here that really just kind of have stayed with me. Mm-hmm. From the little tiny diorama stuff to, like, a very cool treehouse that is used in several very disturbing ways. Mm-hmm. I think this is a movie that people should see, but... go into it knowing that it's not going to be like jump scares and throw your popcorn and grab your girlfriend's arm. It's not that kind of movie. It's more one of those sort of Polanski experiences where by the end of it, you're just like, nothing's going to get better and the world is a terrifying place.
Right. While we're talking about houses, oh God, that house. Beautiful, beautiful, dark craftsman.
Bucolic.
House. Where nothing is right.
Yeah.
Everything bad is happening. I am not ambivalent about that ending.
Okay.
I love that ending. I love this movie. How do I explain to you why I love this movie without giving things away? It is like...
Well, you can talk about the... You've cited the Ordinary People.
If Ordinary People was The Shining... And that's kind of it. Like, if I was going to do an old, you know, the player style pitch.
Right, right.
I loved, first of all, how it looks. I love the performances from Toni Collette and from the kid.
Alex Wolff,
the son.
Did you know he's the son of Polly Draper?
Oh, now I see it.
Yeah.
Now I see her face and mm-hmm. his face. He's got mom's face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Polly Draper used to be on 30-something back yes. in the 80s. Anyway, here's the thing I love, and I came home and I said this immediately to you after seeing it, which, by the way, I saw it here up the street at the AMC Sunset 5, some walking distance from our house, on our row, my back row, Phil Blankenship, Heavy Midnights, and Jackie, they were there, and they knew the people on their left. This was like everyone knew each other on that row. I was sitting, unfortunately, to my right, next to the people who do this in a movie. A couple who whispered a little too loudly back and forth to each other the whole thing. Wait, what is, what's happening? Why did he, what's, where are they gonna, I don't get, but then, okay, but what, okay, no, he just, blah, 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 like, and I'm just like, shut up!
Wait for Redbox.
Yeah.
Oh, I also, by the way, part of what I love about the sound design is that not only is there a really cool score for this movie,
yeah.
but it is mixed down in such a way that it feels like it's coming through the wall from somewhere else,
yeah.
which is very cool.
I love how this film skillfully takes a thing that I don't like, which in horror, which is the supernatural, because mm-hmm. it's not scary to me, and walks on both sides of a fence. Really?
Yes.
Is a supernatural thing happening? Or is this family just so disastrously messed up that the mania of trauma that just gets repeated and repeated and repeated through the generations, is that what's really happening?
Right.
And I love how it kind of, well, I won't say what it does, but I love the balance that it strikes between those two things. And because of that, the latter quality, that is the stuff that makes the film so very upsetting.
I don't want to establish this as some kind of criterion for horror, but I think that one of the strongest things about this film is that at some point, you could do an edit of this movie in which nothing supernatural is even hinted at.
Uh-huh.
And you would still have this really intense
yes.
family drama.
Yes.
And it succeeds as a really intense family drama for so long that when it starts going into other directions, or more sort of external directions, I was like, this isn't as interesting.
No,
whether or not I'm supposed to take it literally, this isn't as interesting.
Very, very into it. All of it. Okay. Every choice that the filmmaker made, I was into it.
Okay.
Yeah. I recommend this heartily. It is not, again, it is not a kind of horror movie.
It's not paranormal activity.
It is just really, really, really unhappy, upsetting, traumatic, and intense.
I recommend this as a movie to see in the theater.
I agree with you.
Ideally not next to the whispering people, but I think the technical choices...
Well, if you didn't see it this weekend, you're going to have plenty of opportunities to see it in empty theaters.
Yeah, I'm sure the drop-off is going to be...
Because the drop-off is going to be big, because the word of mouth on this is not going to be good.
You know, it's funny, A24 did the same thing with The Witch,
yes.
and somehow made that work, even though a lot of people were mad that that wasn't the sort of...
Right.
The kind of horror movie that they
yes.
were promised.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, but I this is a movie to see in a theater because, like I said, the sound choices, the cinematography, there's so much going on that's going to get lost in a home video setting, you really do need to go and buy a ticket.
I watched Revenge, finally.
Yes, I'm so glad you did.
Revenge has been out for a while.
About a month or so.
About a month. It had a little bit of a theatrical...
Well, it was day and date, so it's been streaming all along.
Right, but it's been in theaters, and I guess in some places it still might...
But if not, it's definitely streaming. You can watch it.
It's technically, it's a French film.
Yeah, it's a French filmmaker. I mean,
Coralie Farge. Yeah, I don't know how you say her name.
It's a French production, but it's mostly in English. Some of it's in French with English subtitles.
Yeah, it's primarily in English, even though the people, the actors are French.
Right.
And it stars a woman named Matilda Lutz. She is
a superstar.
She plays the mistress.
Yes.
Of a hot dude.
A wealthy cad.
Who takes her on a little getaway to the desert. Some beautiful, gorgeously modern...
glass boxy house.
Glass house in the middle of the desert.
With an infinity pool.
And his buddies show up, and they're going to go on some kind of desert hunting trip. That was very confusing to me. Because I thought, wait a second, what's there to hunt? Rattlesnakes? Like, what are y'all going after?
Iguanas? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, they show up a day early. She's supposed to have been gone by then, but they show up a day early.
And everything's fine until boyfriend leaves into town to go get hunting permits. And then the friends...
One of the friends rapes her, and the other one sort of turns the TV up and ignores it and pretends it's not happening. The boyfriend comes back and, like, basically offers to sort of, you know, pay her off and try and make this thing go away. She's not...
Yeah, he's suddenly not such a great dude.
Yeah. She's not having it, and so he throws her off a cliff and leaves her for dead because she's been impaled in the side by a branch.
Oh, no, it's... All right, here's where we go. Okay. It is at this point in the film that you are either in... or you're out. For a good 10-15 minutes, I sat there going, wait, but... Because it's not... She's not impaled in the side. She's run through with a tree. and this is not really a spoiler, because it happens fairly early in the film. And it is... the point of no return for you as an audience member. And I think it's important that maybe you know this going in. In fact, it is in reviews as well. And it is no less shocking for knowing what's coming. I read about this impalement before I saw the film.
You're the only person I know who's seen it who literally was getting into all these technical details. That how is she even alive?
How is she even alive? Well, it took me 15 minutes to remember that I once watched a reality television program called I Was Impaled.
Thank you very much.
And people were impaled with all kinds of things in this reality television show. And they had dramatic
Christmas trees.
Recreations of the ER visits.
Yes.
And you know what people can survive sometimes?
Impalements.
Absolute impalements. And so after about 15 minutes, I thought, okay, sure. It's like she was on that show. I Was Impaled. And now she's going to get the title...
Revenge. Yeah, they leave her for dead. Big mistake.
So this is obviously very much like I Spit on Your Grave.
Ms. 45.
Yes.
But the difference is it's directed by a woman.
And directed by a woman.
And that makes a huge difference.
It makes all the difference in the world. Because the filmmaking is really interesting in terms of the camera's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, her agency is given, taken away, and then given again.
And also, I think in a lot of times in a rape revenge movie, the filmmaker is as interested in the rape as in the revenge part.
Right.
Like, the rape is presented in an isn't this terrible kind of way, but isn't terrible, let's look at every moment.
That's I Spit on Your Grave.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this movie is like, okay, a rape is happening and we're clear that it's happening, but we're not going to look at that because you've seen that in every other movie ever made. And
right.
We're not going there.
Right.
And it in no way diminishes her, you know, drive for revenge and our, like,
where we are going.
And our rooting for her to get it.
Where we are going is to Blood R Us. It's a store where they sell gallons of blood.
Yeah.
And this movie bought all the gallons of blood at Blood R Us and used all of them, all the gallons. By the end of this,
you were back to, how is she even alive?
By the end of it, I was back to, how is she even alive? Because this, I'm not going to tell you. It's just, it's bananas.
It's so entertaining.
And completely entertaining.
And so crisply made.
You're cheering. By the end of it, you're yelling at the screen and cheering for her. And like, no, go get him over there. You know, it's very,
and like,
it's very much like that.
Also, you know, Rich Cad has your basic sort of like, you know, leading man body, and he's naked a lot more than she is.
Oh yeah,
you know, which again, female filmmaker makes all the difference.
Yeah,
This is like, April loves this movie. She says that like as much as she was pushing raw on everybody last year,
right,
this year it's all about revenge. And in fact, we were talking on the show that revenge and Wake in Fright would make an interesting double feature.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, men absolutely doing terrible things in the desert.
Now, you watched Alex Strangelove.
I did.
I did not, and based on your description, it might take me a while to get around to it, if ever.
Okay.
Because I did my time already with Love, Simon.
Right.
And I don't know how much else I need in 2018.
This is a different film than Love, Simon, although they have a lot of connective tissue. It is a teen white boy gay movie.
Okay.
But whereas Love, Simon was about a kid who knows he's gay trying to navigate the process of coming out to friends and family, Alex isn't quite sure what his deal is.
Right.
He has a girlfriend, but at the same time, like, she's pressuring him to have sex, and he's always kind of coming up with reasons not to. And
right.
Then he meets a gay guy who's a year older, and maybe he's into him. Maybe he's into both of them. Is he gay? Is he bi? Is he straight? He doesn't know. And so the movie is about him navigating that sort of path within himself to figure out just what his deal is. And it's written and directed by Craig Johnson, who did The Skeleton Twins, which is a movie that I liked more than you did, as I recall.
Yes.
Were you a fan of Wilson?
Ish.
Okay, I liked Wilson a lot.
Right.
So I'm a fan of this filmmaker. I did. There was somebody on Facebook who made an observation about how I believe it was Rolf over in the in the Who Shot You group, who talks about how this is a movie where the girlfriend gets stuck doing a lot of, you know, to use our niece Pilar's favorite phrase, the emotional labor of women.
yes.
You know, she's got to be super understanding and stuff as this whole process unfolds. But like,
it's an expression that comes up quite often when Pilar comes over to watch The Bachelorette.
Oh, I'm sure. Yes.
Yes.
There's an extended sequence in which the two of them like finally get a hotel room and they're going to like have sex for the first time. And it is, on the whole, a really funny and awkward and painful and true feeling sequence of the film, and really well acted. The girl is, her name is Madeline Weinstein. She's the girl from Beach Rats.
Okay.
And then the lead guy, I've never seen anything before, but he's really good. And I think this is, you know, it is a sweet movie, and it is also, like Love, Simon, kind of John Hughes inflected. It ends at the prom.
I don't care about prom.
But
I don't care about anybody's prom.
I am down for...
I never have.
I am down for this new brand of gay teen movie, particularly if we can start opening the door to other kinds of gay teen movies. gays, lesbian ones, and trans ones, and bi ones, and
when
people of color ones.
When are they going to happen?
Well, you knew that these were going to be first.
When are they going to happen and not just live at Outfest and other queer film festivals and never be seen by anyone else?
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
But that's what I want to happen. And all right. And here's the thing. If these movies fail, those other movies are definitely not happening.
Are you telling me it's my moral obligation to go buy a ticket to Alex Strange
Love?
Or
just, you know what? You could turn it on to Netflix and let it...
Oh, it's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
Okay.
It is on Netflix. It is playing theatrically, but it is on Netflix. You could turn on Netflix and let it run through while you're doing housework. And that counts as a viewing.
I suppose you're right.
Yeah. You might like some of it. It has a very funny gross out moment involving gummy worms.
Okay. You know what? I've kind of had my fill of gummy things lately. Like, I bought those gummy men over 50 vitamins.
That was on you.
I know. And I just, now I have to have one every day. And I'm just, every time I put it in my mouth, I'm like, this doesn't really taste very good. Why can't we have a Flintstone vitamin back? Back those little chalky candy ones.
You know what?
Maybe they still exist.
Keep an eye out, because I would be more down for that.
I might just be interested in just swallowing one of those giant Centrums and not have to chew it or trick me into having it like it's candy.
A big bulky one a day.
It doesn't taste all that good.
Well, I seem to recall somebody saying they actually recommended that adults take children's vitamins because most vitamins... Over a portion. So you might as well just have the kiddie dose.
I'm a Flintstones kid.
All right, chew on some Betty Rubble.
Yeah. I tell you, I don't like those gummy vitamins. But do you know what I do like?
What do you like, Dave?
You, just the way you are.
You're special.
You're special to me.
You are my friend.
You are.
You're special to me.
I'm also married to you, but you're
my
friend.
There's only one you in this wonderful world.
That is
you
a fact.
You are special.
Why don't you talk about Won't You Be My Neighbor, the documentary about Fred Rogers. Now, I think... for the sake of people who are listening outside of the United States.
And for people who are under a certain age.
It would help if we explained who
Fred Rogers was. Fred Rogers was an ordained Presbyterian minister, but is most famous for creating a television program for children. He did a sort of a local version in the 60s, but in 1968, he went on public television with a show called Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And every day, Mr. Rogers would walk into the door of this house singing a song about Won't You Be My Neighbor? And he would remove his jacket and put on a cardigan. He would take off his street shoes and put on a pair of sneakers. And he would talk to the camera in a way that suggested that he was talking to you, the young child who was watching the show.
Very young child.
Very young child.
I was 4 years old when this show made its way out of Pittsburgh and onto national public television. I watched it from the beginning until about the age of...
what, nine?
Six, seven, eight.
Okay, yeah.
Somewhere in second grade, I guess.
You get too cool for Mr.
By
Rogers.
By third grade, I was way too cool for Mr. Rogers. Yeah. I was an adult.
Yes.
But those first, like, 3-4 years, I was... A devoted viewer.
I was, you know, like, just after I was born, Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood came on the air.
Yes.
And so I couldn't tell you when I started watching those shows.
Yes.
But I was watching them from a very early age. You know, I could read at four. A good deal of that was because of Sesame Street.
Yes.
But Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was just a kind show. And it was a show that made kids feel like they mattered and that somebody cared about them. And that the world was an interesting, curious place. And so a lot of the show would be, you know, Mr. Rogers would go places. Like, he would go to a bakery and he would show you, like, behind the scenes of the bakery and how all that worked. There were recurring characters who would pop in, like Mr. McFeely, the delivery man, you know. There was at one point a trolley that would go through his living room and out.
Every episode.
Every episode. Did I say that?
A little toy trolley on a track.
A little toy trolley would go through a hole in the wall of his house, and then on the other end it would emerge in the Kingdom of Make-Believe, and which was ruled over by King Friday the 13th and his wife Sarah. There was Lady Elaine Fairchild, who was this strange-looking kind of witchy woman in a round house.
Yeah.
There was a Lady Aberlin, who was played by Betty Aberlin, who was a pretty lady who was very sweet to everyone.
Right. Except Lady Aberlin was a puppet.
Yes. Point that out.
These were all puppets. These were puppets.
Most of them voiced by Mr. Rogers. There was an X the Owl and Henrietta Pussycat, who lived next door to each other in a tree. Daniel Striped Tiger lived in a clock.
Yeah.
And I think there are several generations of American kids grew up watching this show. And the amazing thing about Fred Rogers is that he's the kind of celebrity we don't make anymore.
Right.
In that he was thoroughly compassionate, scandal-free,
yep.
apolitical.
Yep.
At least in the specifics, not in the broader sense, obviously.
Right.
Just an extraordinary figure, and somebody who I think a lot of us loved at an early age because he was this calm, kind, reassuring figure on television. And I guess I forgot how much I loved that show until I started watching Won't You Be My Neighbor. In the first 5 minutes of the movie, as you point out, you see him, like, it's a behind the scenes footage where he opens this wooden box and the trolley came out. I started crying.
Yep.
Just seeing the trolley like made me start crying. And it's just this lovely, lovely portrait of this lovely individual. It's directed by Morgan Neville, who did
20 Feet from Stardom.
20 Feet from Stardom. Also did Best of Enemies,
yes.
The documentary about Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley from a couple years ago that I really liked a lot. And in fact, he screened that film at Outfest. And at the time, when I asked him, what are you working on next? He said, I'm doing a documentary about Mr. Rogers. And I was like, I can't wait. So I don't know how this movie is going to play to people who don't know who Mr. Rogers is and didn't watch the show.
It won't. They won't go see it. They don't know what that is and they don't care.
But this movie's getting really great reviews, and I wouldn't be surprised if it wound up being like an Oscar nominee. And so I think there are people who are going to see it who are either young or, like you say, didn't grow up in America. I mean, we ran into somebody who watches What the Flick at our screening, who's from Korea, who said he did not grow up on the show, like he had seen clips on YouTube or whatever.
Yes.
But it's just a fascinating story about, you know, he helped kind of save public television in its infancy when Nixon tried to kill it. He did this, he testified before Congress and, convinced them to hang on to it.
Almost immediately after public television was invented, Richard Nixon tried to kill it.
Yes.
In fact, let's just be real. Every Republican since Richard Nixon has tried to kill public television.
Yes, it's always right up there with the National Endowment of the Arts for things
that they
just want to
They always go after for. Public television.
But the show, as kind as it was, respected kids' capacity to sort of understand the world. So, like, he did an episode about the Robert Kennedy assassination in 68 after that happened. You know, Susan Stamberg from National Public Radio talks about how whenever a tragedy would occur, she would have Fred come on the show to talk about how do we talk to kids about this.
Right.
You know, the challenge.
They did a week about what happens when a pet dies or a family member dies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't always, here's a trauma, how do you get through it? It was very much on a daily basis. He would do things like, well, here's how you core an apple, you know. Yeah. Here's how you, it's, first of all, little kid life skills.
Yes.
And little kid fears, little kid concerns, how to share.
Yeah.
How to be nice to people.
They talk about how it was slow television and quiet television in a way that is revolutionary for anything aimed at children.
Yes.
I mean, we there's always this assumption that kids have to be constantly bombarded with images and sounds
and sensations.
And he would You know, they cut to him literally like pulling a turtle out of a box and it crawling across the carpet.
Letting you see a turtle crawl across the carpet.
In real time. Yeah. You know, like one time they said, do you want to know how long a minute is? And they would set an egg timer and they just sat there in a minute.
Because it was a lesson about patience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's an amazing movie about a fascinating figure, but also about this moment in the culture and in the media that you know, we may never experience again.
I don't know that we will.
Yeah.
I wonder sometimes if, as a single voice in the culture, if he managed to turn the culture as much as he hoped he would.
Well, there was this the doc talked about a couple of years ago. There was this moment where the Fox News types of the world were trying to demonize him for telling kids that they were special, and so that turned them all, that made them all entitled little bastards.
Listen, everyone at Fox News is a disingenuous creep.
Yeah,
if you're employed by Fox News, your job is to be awful, and to take a thing that everyone loves and is a widely recognized good.
Yes,
and figure out why it made people liberal. Seriously.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So when they threw that into the documentary, I thought, of course. I mean, I didn't hear that little wave of
I remember
of stuff
happened, yeah.
when it happened. But it doesn't surprise me. And it's just one more brick in that wall from them. Surprised to learn that who was the guy who played the police officer?
Oh yeah, Jacques
Gregory. Was that his last name?
Something else. I forget.
Anyway, a gay actor.
Yeah,
and he had a bit of a problem with Fred Rogers because the production found out that he was gay, and that the producers did. And that he had been to gay bars in Pittsburgh, I guess.
Yeah, with the show, Sean.
And Fred Rogers took him aside and said,
you can't go to that bar anymore.
You can't go to that bar anymore. We can't, you know, I want you on the show, but this is not what people are ready for.
Well, there was a concern about losing sponsors because, because public TV shows are underwritten by a lot of corporate types. And again, this was like, what, probably 1970?
It was the early 1970s, yes. Yeah. And so, but then they talk about how over time, this actor's, you know, participation in the show and his friendship with Fred Rogers caused Fred Rogers to rethink his
stance. Yeah,
because he was a typical, you know, heterosexual Christian dude of the 1960s and 70s who would look at homosexuality and say, oh no,
can't
have that. But he was this is
he's the good kind of Christian.
He's the good kind of Christian. He's the kind that learns and listens to human beings tell their stories. And sometimes it takes time and sometimes it's immediate, but
I love
it came around.
And it's funny, like you keep thinking it like a documentary like this is going to sort of rip the lid off of this
guy. There's no lid.
You're going to find out this terrible thing.
Yeah.
And like one of his sons, his wife talks about how the two of them were raised to never show anger, and they just didn't know how to do it.
No, not the sons. The sons were not. The mother and
no.
Clarify your pronouns,
okay, sorry.
Please.
Fred Rogers' wife says that she and Fred were both raised not to show anger.
Yes.
And then one of the sons talks about how when they would be having dinner and he was going to say something that was not very Mr. Rogers-y, he would say it in the voice of Lady Elaine Fairchild.
Right. she was the cranky, grumpy, not nice character in the land of make-believe.
Exactly.
On the show.
Yeah. It's a wonderful movie. You should see it even if you don't know who Fred Rogers is, because you should know who Fred Rogers is.
Yeah.
And maybe like take one of your parents because they'll know who Fred Rogers
is. Oh yeah. Ocean's Eight. It's a heist movie.
Yeah.
Starring all the ladies.
Yes.
Cate Blanchett, Sandra Bullock,
mm-hmm.
Rihanna,
mm-hmm.
Awkwafina, who's a rapper. Yeah, I don't know if you might not know her, but she's funny and has a filthy mouth.
Yes. And can you name all eight from memory?
If you go to YouTube and type in Awkwafina, not the water, her name is spelled
A-W-K.
A-W-K. You'll see her videos, and they are hilarious. So there's her. Also, there's Helena Bonham Carter. There's Sarah Paulson, Anne Hathaway, and the other one.
Mindy Kaling.
Mindy Kaling. Thank you. So Sandra Bullock is the
sister.
She's the sister or the spouse or whoever of Danny Ocean. She's released from prison. She spent her time in prison plotting this big heist of the Met Gala. She goes to Cate Blanchett. Cate Blanchett's like, sure, let's do it. They go to Sarah Paulson. They're all in. Everyone's in. And the mark in this heist is Anne Hathaway, who plays a flibbertigibbet of a vain actress.
Daphne Kluger.
Yeah. So she is an unwitting participant.
Yes.
In this heist, because she's going to be wearing a
legendary Cartier necklace.
So the Met Ball, it's like six pounds of diamonds around your neck, and it's worth $150 million. And then they go and they steal it, and they get away with it. And I'm telling you this because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That you know that the film all but tells you immediately from its very tone and every single action and non-surprising, non-complicated, no trouble for the heist, no suspense.
Yeah, there's not a stake or a moment of suspense in this at all.
They're going to sail right through. They're going to breeze on out. They're going to win. It's going to be a victorious day for all the ladies who are in on the heist. And there's like one bit of twist near the end, but even that is sort of like, oh, okay, sure, that's fine. And
even under those circumstances and in that context, though, this movie still feels...
I had a very good time.
I had a nice time.
Yeah.
I even maybe had a good time, but I didn't have a very good time.
I had a very good time.
And I wanted to have a very good time with this cast. And I feel like the movie doesn't exploit them well enough.
It does not use... There are so many of them.
Yes.
And it wants to give everyone a moment. And by doing that, it doesn't give anyone enough time.
Yeah.
To do a deeper character situation.
Sandra Bullock gets a couple of big scenes early on, where she lies to the parole board about how she wants to go straight, and then she immediately gets out and starts like shoplifting half of Bergdorf Goodman. Two fun scenes, and then the rest of the movie, she's sort of relegated to being the organizer, and she's the host of the party and wants to make sure that you talk to everybody else.
Right.
I would occasionally have these moments of like pleasure out of what I was getting, but I spent most of the movie thinking, this should be better, this should be better, this should be sharper, this should be funnier, I should be having more moments with these actresses that I'm not getting.
You are 100% correct, and yet I still had a very good time.
Fair enough.
It could have been way better, it could have been way smarter, way funnier, but I dig all eight of these women so much. Was especially looking forward to Rihanna, and I've decided that Rihanna is the tone of the film. Hear me out.
Okay.
When Rihanna is in a film, you're not going to see it because you're expecting her to be, an acting revelation.
Mm-hmm.
You just want her presence. I saw her in Battleship, and I thought, look, there's Rihanna in Battleship. And then I saw her in
Valerian,
and I thought, oh, cool, Rihanna's here. And then she shows up in the Manolo Blahnik documentary and says, like, the funniest thing in the movie. And I thought, I sure am happy to see Rihanna talking about Manolo Blahnik shoes. And then Rihanna comes into this movie, and I thought, yay, Rihanna! And they all just hang out. In fact, Kyle Buchanan tweeted, he goes, this movie is a hangout movie. It is
disguised as a heist movie.
It's everybody wants some, but with women. All just hanging out, and they're going to get $150 million at the end. Just by hanging out.
I wanted more hangout then, and better written hangout. It was the same issue that I had with Book Club, and not because it's a movie centered around women, but because it's a movie centered around really talented performers who don't get enough screen time just being in each other's presence. So that was my issue with...
There are great outfits.
Definitely. Some fun cameos.
Anne Hathaway
is killing it, because she's not only giving you this really fun character.
She's the MVP of this film.
Oh, unquestionably.
She's the funniest person in the film.
She is trolling the haters.
Oh yeah.
Because in a major way. Because she is basically playing this version of what people who don't like her think she is, which is this irritating it girl actress.
Yes.
And it's like, you know what? Y'all need to shut up and go see Colossal before you come haunting on her. But she's having the best time being like, oh, this is what you think I am? Let me show you what that would actually look like. And I'm going to make you love that.
Anne Hathaway has been in some heinously bad films.
Oh, unquestionably.
And she is always, even in the worst of those films, a pleasure.
Except...
Name it.
Les Miserables. Her Oscar movie. She's awful in that, but it's an awful movie.
Okay, so I'm going to say this back to you. Les Miserables is an awful movie.
Yes.
But she sings her guts out.
She is keening to the back wall.
And I was there for it.
I was not.
Yeah.
I have not seen either of the Princess Diaries, so I can't attest to those.
They are abominations.
Yes, yeah, I know. You,
and she is a charmer.
But in Les Miserables, I was like, oh God, stop it.
And you can avoid adding me about the Princess Diaries movies, because I'm right.
Yes. Dave did
They are the most toxically anti-feminist films.
You did a lengthy essay about the misogyny
of
the Princess Diaries movie that I thought was great.
You show those to your daughter and you're a bad parent.
Yes.
Someone
should call Child Protective Services.
Yes. So she's a delight in this. Go see it for Anne Hathaway. Honestly.
She's terrific. Yeah. My final take on it was, it's a lark, but it's not a spree.
Okay. That's fine. I live with you, so I know the difference between a lark and a spree.
I would hope so. We're going to talk about Hearts Beat Loud next time, because Dave wants to see it.
I want to see it. You got a DVD recommendation?
I do. I'm going to recommend Wilson, because I think that movie kind of came and went without people. Well, I was going to recommend Best of Enemies, but I think I've done that before.
Probably.
Wilson kind of came and went, and people did not really get a chance to see it. And it's based on a Dan Clowes comic, and I believe he wrote the screenplay. And it's directed by Craig Johnson, who did Alex Strangelove, and has a really terrific Woody Harrelson performance. And one of... several of recent vintage, one of the great Laura Dern performances.
I agree. She is really good.
Check it out.
She's always really good.
She is.
What
about you?
Well, this is not a DVD recommendation.
Okay.
This is a Filmstruck recommendation.
You guys.
Filmstruck now has like 6 or 8 films from Strobe VA.
Yes, they do.
Ooh! It's like the ice cream man just drove past.
And including some you haven't seen.
Oh, I haven't seen like 5 of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you're going to watch one with me. I'll just select one for you. It'll be great.
I'll watch the 23-minute one.
Daniel Huillet and Jean-Marie Strobe were French filmmakers who went to Germany to have their careers. It was because...
He didn't want to get drafted to the Algerian War.
Jean-Marie Strobe was a resistor to being drafted in the Algerian War. And they went to Germany and they made their career there. And they made... How do you say in French? Rigorously uncompromising. I'm going to tell you something about these cats. the husband and wife team. Movies that are so thick that I have had to watch them like twice because I get done with one and I'm like, I don't know what happened there. Nothing makes me more excited than a movie that puts me to work.
Great.
I love to be entertained as well. But part of my entertainment, quite often, involves, are you pushing me? Are you really pushing me? And I recommend a lot of people who will push you.
Yes.
But these people will seriously push you.
So yes, Strophe on Filmstruck, and...
half the time, I finish one of their movies, and I'm like, I wasn't ready. Can I get a do-over? I gotta watch that again.
I didn't do the homework.
I need to do some homework. Something. There's something wrong with me.
Also,
anyway, legends, and now they're on Filmstruck.
And while you're on Filmstruck, check out the Dressing the Part. Is that what it's called?
It is called Dressing the Part. It is a collection of films about drag.
Yes, and drag and performance. And I'm interviewed in the little overview
Little wraparound piece.
And
they did for
dropping
it.
On Friday,
this
June
Friday.
15th.
Yes,
is the films of Derek Jarman. Almost all of his features are being shown on Filmstruck, and I am introducing them, except for two of them. And I'm going to go back in and do intros for those as well, and they'll be up through December. So yeah.
So get into it. Get yourself some Filmstruck and watch Alonzo Duralde host Derek Jarman films.
Yes.
He's going to give you the introductions.
I'm going to intro the heck out of them.
Yeah.
Letters?
Stephanie says, we don't really listen to an LK incarnation every day. She's talking about all the different... She's a Patreon subscriber, so she gets... I don't know how many of the podcasts that she gets. There are four of them. Because we don't really listen to an LK incarnation every day. It just seems that way. Especially because Linoleum Knife and Fork is always playing in the kitchen when a child wanders in looking for a handout. Thank you, Stephanie. What do you hand out to them? Is it a cookie? Is it a cookie from a recipe I gave you on Linoleum Knife and Fork?
Maybe a handful of sultanas.
This is from Kelsey. Who says, with regard to Lean on Pete.
Okay.
This is the Andrew Haig film from a couple months ago about the boy and his horse.
Yes.
One of my favorite films of the year.
Yes.
Lean on Pete. Would you say that the animal suffering in the film is closer to Black Beauty or, I don't know, Free Willy? These might be movies that only Dave has seen. Given that they fall within his carting kids to the movies era.
I saw Free Willy. I did not see the new Black Beauty.
Because I can handle Free Willy animal suffering, although I think Black Beauty was a fantastic movie. I've only seen it all the way through twice because it is rough. And if Lean on Pete is on that level, I don't think I will be able to make it. Can we just say what happens?
Let's just say it's way worse than what happens in Free Willy.
It is way worse than what happens in Free Willy.
All right, the horse dies.
The horse dies in an accident, and you see it.
Yeah.
You witness it on screen, and I will tell you, I have a fairly cast-iron disposition when it comes to stuff like that in films. And when it happened, I went, oh, my God! And I, my hands were over my mouth, and I gasped, and it was like... people heard me.
This is a movie that it puts you through the ringer.
Yeah.
But it's a great movie.
I was one of the many people who made it necessary for the studio to make it known that Idris Elba and Kate Winslet plane crash, that in the Idris Elba Kate Winslet plane crash movie, the dog does not die.
This would be a good time to mention doesthedogdie.com.
Yes.
If you are somebody who really needs to know how the dog fares in a movie, because somebody asked me about
that. Lean on Pete would not be in Does the Dog
Well,
Die.
Well, I don't know if they have a side
does
section,
the horse,
Does the Horse
or
Die?
Cat or, you know,
but does the dog,
other animal?
I don't know how broad their outreach is, but doesthedogdie.com is a thing, and if that's a deal breaker for you on movies, you might want to do your research.
Yeah. P.S. She continues, Dave is in fact wrong about Hocus Pocus sucking. But you were both totally correct about the Secret Garden.
Yes.
The early 90s
Agnieszka
Holland version.
So good.
I could listen to a whole hour of discussion about that wonderful cozy film. It's cozy with a trademark symbol after it.
Because we talked about it when Matt and Jillian from the All Things Cozy podcast were on.
Maybe we should make it a Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife
title. I would enjoy doing
that. We have a few lined up that we're going
to
do.
But what if we did
that one?
I would have to read the book. I've never read the book.
I read the book when I was very young.
Francis
Hodgson Burnett. That film, that Agnieszka Holland, 1993.
So beautiful.
Wow, it is such a beautiful film.
That was my favorite film that year.
Yeah.
And that was the year of Schindler's List and the Piano.
And it's fine if you think I'm wrong about Hocus Pocus sucking, because it's an objective fact, and I don't really need to defend it.
This might be the year that I break down and watch it, just so I have a dog in this hunt and can say, as a matter of fact, no, I don't like Hocus Pocus, because at the moment all I can say is, no, I don't care about Hocus Pocus.
Right, right. Maxwell, not the singer.
No.
A different Maxwell.
Yes, Maxwell Smart.
Hello, Alonso and Dave. My name is Matthew. Matthew? Wait. His email says Maxwell.
Well?
I'm so confused now.
He contains multitudes.
How many names? If that is your real name.
Yes.
Longtime fan of the podcast, I wanted to ask if you could give me any recommendations for films that deal in bisexuality. Many thanks, and keep up the good work.
That is a tricky question because your underrepresented communities
there.
On film. I always say whenever I'm meeting, when I'm talking to indie filmmakers, I always tell them make a halfway decent bisexual movie and every LGBT film festival will screen it because that's always the area that we have a hard time finding.
So, you can make a mediocre bisexual movie and they'll program it.
Oh, heck yeah. Especially as long as you
can just half-ass it.
As long as you don't make a bisexual movie where the bisexual characters are like, you know, devious homewreckers.
Or have to change or have to choose.
Yes. Yeah. None of that. But
because here's the great thing about being bisexual. You can just get it with anybody.
Ostensibly, yes.
Yeah.
But there are not a lot
of... What a pleasure in life that would be.
There are not a ton of movies that really deal with that aspect of life. I would recommend a movie called Three.
Yeah.
Dry, by Tom Tykwer, the guy who made Run, Lola, Run, and has since been collaborating with the Wachowskis on Cloud Atlas and on Sense8. It is a movie about a married couple, a man and a woman. They've been together for a long time. They're somewhat dissatisfied. They both begin having an affair, and ultimately they discover that they're having an affair with the same guy.
Yep.
And the movie does not treat this as the stuff of farce or as a thing that anybody needs to be punished over. And it's very, humane about the whole thing. And I think addresses bisexuality in a way that I think all too few movies do.
Yeah, I agree. There's just not enough out there, and what is out there is often
it pathologizes,
equivocating. Yeah. And so I would like to see a lot more. I mean, because here's the thing: the bisexuals exist.
Yes.
And straight people don't want them to exist, and queer people don't want them to exist because it ruins everybody's binary.
Right.
Okay. And that annoys the hell out of me. And so what I want is some really cool bisexual movies. Please, please, if you're a filmmaker and you're even halfway good, please go make that. Please go make that film.
The world is starving for them.
Yes. The end.
Okay.
We're at the end of the podcast.
All right. Well, hey, thanks everybody for listening. As always, thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. Go visit Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. That's his website. You can keep up with all of his cool stuff. He just wrote a song for Big Frida that's a lot of fun.
I've heard it, and yeah. It is.
So he's a stone cold gas all the time. And so is ChristyLemire.com and Bibbs and Whitney's podcasts, Canceled Too Soon, and critically acclaimed on the Schmoes Know Network. And of course, check out the Schmoes Know while you're there. Listen to Dennis Edwin with Dennis Hensley and All Things Cozy and the Comics Canon and Sewers of Paris, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Film Spotting, SVU, and Secretly Timid. I'm going to be on a show in July called Tinseltown, which is...
Gee, Alonzo, what could it be about?
It is one
is
of...
Is it about Hollywood, the land they call Tinseltown?
You would think.
Or could it be referring to some other use of the word tinsel?
You might think that it was about Hollywood, but no, it's about holiday movies.
Oh, what a surprise that will be
one of three year-round podcasts about holiday movies. I clearly missed the boat on that one. Uh-huh. But anyway, I talked to the mayor of Christmas about one of my favorite Christmas movies, and that's going to be popping up in July.
Mayor of Christmas?
That's what he calls himself.
Wait a second. If he's the mayor of Christmas, uh-huh, and Ricky Carmona on Who Shot You calls you...
El mero mero de Navidad.
What is a mero mero?
I'm not entirely sure.
Wasn't he calling you El Rey?
Yes.
De Navidad? Well, what's the difference between a rey and a mero mero?
I need to find out what a mero mero is. I haven't asked him. I'm going to ask
Ain't
him.
That Spanish?
It's a slang thing.
Spanish is your native tongue.
He's from Cuba. It's a slang thing I don't know.
But your whole family... Listen, when you were growing up, your family only knew Cubans. Why don't you know these things? Why weren't you paying attention?
I somehow missed out on this one. All right. Will ask him and find out. All right. But anyway, so we're talking about one of my faves. That's going to air in July. We'll talk about that more as we get closer to it. You can... I forgot to... Hang on.
What?
What I was going to say was, you can subscribe to the show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on the show, like this one that we received from Teguan LC. I came to this podcast by way of Pop Rocket.
Yay!
And now tune in every week for the cerebral, sensitive, and often hilarious film observations of Dave and Alonzo. Also love Alonzo's contribution to Who Shot Ya? Thank you. Further, more Dave White in everything. He is the literal best.
I thought we read this on the air already.
No, I read it to you.
Are you sure we didn't read it on the air already?
We had not read it on the air.
I have a memory that we did.
It was sent to me since the last time we recorded, okay. So there's no way we have read it on the show.
Okay.
So thank you, Teguan LC. I believe
yes,
that was
thank you.
Actually on Apple Podcasts UK.
More of me and everything.
Indeed. No argument here with that. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at LinoleumCast. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And as we mentioned early on, for more of this, patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Yeah.
Get into it. Okay. Have a great...
Biting my rhyme.
That's right.
I said get into it earlier.
Oh,
just copy
sorry.
Me. Stop copying me.
It was in the ether. All right. Have a good Pride Month. Go look at my stuff on Filmstruck and Strobe Huyang movies, too.
The Derry Jarman stuff on Filmstruck, the Strobe Huyang stuff on Filmstruck.
And the drag films.
The drag films. Go be bisexual.
Make that happen.
It's Pride Month.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll check you next time.
Goodbye.